what they know about them Texas boys.
You're listening to the most dangerous show in Texas, Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn.
Wherever you are, however you may be listening, it is now Fight Night. Welcome to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn and hornfm.com. I'm your host. You can find me on Twitter at EddieExperience1E in the middle. And joining me as always, the guy who still hasn't given me an MMANonstop.com t-shirt, Mr. Jordan Wahlberger. Jordan, that shirt looks pretty nice on you.
It's one of many, Eddie, that I have. But, you know, we didn't buy any mediums when we first made that initial order. And you're not fitting into a large these days. You're too svelte. Look at you.
How do you not buy mediums for an MMA site? Everyone likes to show the muscles, man.
Only extra large all the time. Eddie, it's great to see you. I'm glad you made it back from Houston. Guys, you can find us at Fight Night ATX on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You can find me at Nonstop MMA. Eddie, it's a miracle. You made it back. You made it to Houston. You got back.
Let me tell you.
How was your experience?
It rained like crazy on the way home, so it got a little hairy.
When did you drive home? What time did you wake up on Sunday morning?
About 9:30.
Okay.
So I left around 11.
Easy drive.
It started out okay. I was trying to get out of Houston before the storm hit. I did. But then it was still coming down to 90. So I got a little bit of it got a little blinding for a little bit. I've seen worse, though.
I know your Jeep can handle it. You've got a good car that will get you there. So that is nice.
It's also good for camping.
Yeah, I would not have made it, man. I would not. I'm glad that I decided not to go to Houston. So I told you before that I was going to take my son camping on Friday night. And my original plan was that I was going to get tested and then get tested again on Saturday after the camp out, drive out to Houston and go to the fights. I slept terribly on Friday night. I was in our tent, and I just got a new tent for us that I thought, hey, you know what? It's only the two of us. I'll just get this smaller tent. It's a two-person tent, and that'll be perfect. Let me tell you, that's a lie. And I knew that before, that anytime they tell you, like, what size the tent is, it's always, like, cut it in half and add one person. So if a two-person tent, it's really one and a half. And if it's a four-person tent, then maybe it's three. But it definitely, this tent did not work. It was too small. So much at 3 a.m, Eddie, I woke up, I got my phone, and I set up my return to Amazon for the tent. That's how unhappy I was with the tent. I mean, Drake and I, we were just like shoulder to shoulder in this tent. No room. My bag was sitting on top of him. And I woke up 3 o'clock. I had to go to the bathroom. I couldn't go back to sleep. At 4, I was just like, I just must not be sleeping at all tonight. I'll just go back. So on Saturday night, my kids and I, get this. I've got my kids. We've been working through old 90s TV shows. We've watched all of Full House, all of Saved by the Bell.
No In Living
we're
Color?
Right in the thick, we're not in Living Color. We're right in the middle right now of Family Matters. And so we watched a bunch of episodes of Family Matters last night on Saturday, excuse me. And we were out. I was asleep by like 8:45. And I would have missed the whole thing. I'm so glad I didn't drive to Houston.
And who would have thought that pretending to be homeless for a night would be uncomfortable?
Well, it was rough, so... I'm sorry I wasn't there with you, but having said that, you know, I'm glad that you got the chance to go.
Well, let me tell you how my weekend went. Friday, I visited our Houston office, just put in a little FaceTime, do some work. I leave there, I go to the Marriott Marquis owned by Tillman Fertitta, I believe cousin of the Fertitta brothers. That's where they were putting up the fighters, and then where they were doing the testing. I get there. And they say, oh, it's up on the fourth floor. I go to the elevator, hit number 4, nothing happens. I hit number 4 on the other side, nothing happens. I'm like, oh, the light just must be out. I go up, and it just passes 4, goes to 6. So I ride back down, thinking maybe I'll just get off on like 5 or 6 or something, and walk up, take the stairs. I get off, I'm in the administrative offices. I should not be there. So back on the elevator, back down, find somebody. Like, oh, you got to use the other elevator just around the corner. Someone could have said that. There could have been a sign somewhere. Finally get tested. I sent you a picture. It said touchless testing. I take issue with that because that swab was way in the back of my throat. At least it
was. Oh, it was a throat one. It wasn't a brain one.
It wasn't a brain one. So at least it didn't go up the nose. But it was way back. If I still had tonsils, it would have tickled them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love that.
I told a lady friend of mine. Oh, now I understand. So,
well,
we're gonna skip that part. So I get to the hotel, Wi-Fi's out, and I'm freaking out because 311's doing a streaming show Friday night. So I'm like, you gotta get my Wi-Fi working in time. Just makes it. Watch the show. They announced they're doing a summer tour. 311 in Austin, September 28th. Jordan, you in?
My wife's birthday. It's my wife's birthday.
Oh, bring her.
I won't be there.
Bring her.
But no.
It's gonna be at the new Moody Amphitheater on Red River.
Okay.
So that's a pretty cool spot. But then that weekend, they're playing Red Rocks. I'm like, oh, road trip.
Are you gonna make it? Are you gonna make the road trip out to Colorado?
Well, I'm just gonna fly. I'm not driving that. But yeah, I think I will.
Eddie, when you were at getting tested, did you see any fighters, any media? Was there anything interesting going on when you were over there?
Well, not really. I did have to wait a bit because the buses were arriving. I guess from the, I don't know where they were, because I thought they were staying at that hotel. I guess they were coming back from the arena, maybe.
Maybe so, from the official weigh-in.
Yeah. So I had to wait while Jacare and Caitlin Chukagian came in and went upstairs. But then I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to leave. I can't stay at this expensive-ass hotel. So just let me go. So then I just kind of sidled out in between buses arriving. And now I feel sorry for Jacare after seeing that. And I saw him. I'm like, oh, he's ready to kill this weekend. Yeah, that didn't go
didn't
so well.
That way.
No, it did not.
Eddie, tell me, all right, so let's talk UFC 262. Tell us, what was the experience? Like, how was it? You haven't been in an arena. It's been, you know, over a year since you've been at fights. How was the experience of, and I saw that you were in the media center for a while, just waiting to go out there. Tell me that. Did they have good food? Give us the experience. I want to know.
Let me tell you, it started off so well. I drive up to the garage, and all of a sudden they're charging me $30. To get in, I'm like, no, I'm media. My name's on the list. It doesn't matter. They changed it where it started. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the kind of thing that only happens to me, Jordan. So then
you have to pay $30?
Yeah, I had to pay. Okay. But then Chelsea, the great PR lady for the UFC, hunted down someone with the arena. They gave me a guided call to reverse the charges. Like, oh, we're sorry for the inconvenience. Like, well, thank you for caring. So thank you, Chelsea. I really appreciate that. But then, yeah, I'm in the back for a while.
Turn Navi.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. They are pros. So, yeah, I'm in the back for a while. The food, it was weird. You know how normally there's just kind of like a buffet?
Yeah.
This time they have pre-prepared trays of the side dishes, and then you just pick. It was a brisket or pork loin. And then the lady behind the bar would just, like, shovel one into your tray and hand it to you. So there's no one, you can't have everyone breathing over all the same food.
That makes sense.
So I appreciated that. And then afterwards, for the post-fight presser, they had a single-serve Pizza Hut pizzas.
Nice. Not bad. So you were full.
I was. But then, yeah, so I told you I was planning on staying in the back until probably until the Jacare fight. I'm thinking, since they'd been bringing everyone back for the scrums and everything, although you can't really gather around like you used to, you kind of had to stay at your seat. I'm waiting on Lando Venata to come out, you know, get a shot of him, see what he says. And then while he's there, all of a sudden, Derek Lewis is peeking out from behind the curtain telling him to hurry up because I guess he was scheduled to pop in, and I guess he wanted to do it before the main card started. So then here comes Derek Lewis talking about how the Ngannou fight still isn't official, but he'll easily take the $8 million that was offered to John Jones. How he's starting a hair salon. He's off Popeyes. Right now, he still weighs about 280. And he hates guys with hair. So, okay. Francis Ngannou is right there. So, Jordan, good thing you weren't there. He might have punched you.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Eddie, did you ask, in all of these scrums, did you ask any questions?
Nah.
Did you take the mantle from me? Did you take over my role?
Nah, I'm not a reporter, Jordan. I'm just a radio jackass. I'm just there to, you know, talk about what happens. I'm not trying to make the news. Also, it was a long day and I was tired.
Yeah, I believe it. All right, so let's get into the meat of it, Eddie. You can fill us in any holes that we might be interesting as we go along. But we've got a new lightweight champion. Charles Oliveira defeats Michael Chandler. Second round KO. Stops him, wins the belt. It's his 28th fight in the UFC.
Wow.
What's crazy is he's only 31 years old, though. Well, how did the arena look? And I saw you were a few rows back. You were on press row. How did the arena feel when Charles Oliveira – were people going for Michael Chandler? Were people voting? Like, who were they cheering for?
Everyone was mostly cheering for Chandler. There were loud USA chants. You know, they said the arena was sold out, but you could still see plenty of open seats, which made me wonder exactly, like, who didn't show up. You know, who gets a ticket for this and doesn't show up. But, yeah, the arena for the main event was very pro-Chandler. There were loud USA chants when they weren't doing the wave. And it seemed like it was he had it all lined up for him.
Yeah. No, I mean, after that first round, it really looked that way. I was really surprised. Two of the judges gave him a 10-8. On the scorecard, which I can't imagine a 10-8 because, you know, Oliveira had his back for almost 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And was, you know, threatening a submission in that fight. But it was, he was able to get back up and landed some shots and rained out. I definitely think he won the round, but I don't think it was a 10-8.
Yeah, no. And I think the knockdown wasn't even scored an official knockdown. So that's a weird thing that I heard someone say in the stats, statisticians. But, yeah. Oliveira's down on the ground. He's kind of on all fours, doing the Benson Henderson head bob and weave thing. So he was really able to avoid a lot more damage because that's exactly how Dan Hooker got finished by Michael Chandler in his debut.
Well, I mean, he took the big shot standing up. I mean, that's how Michael
right.
Chandler.
Right. But then he three or four more shots while he was on all fours.
Yeah.
And it was over.
Yeah, no, that's true. So, but Charles Oliveira, he did land a couple of really good shots on him that looked devastating. But no, he persevered, right? He withstood and he was able to get back to his corner and start 19 seconds into the second round. He stops him. He catches him. Was it a right hook or?
I think it was a left.
A left hook, and you know, puts him back. You know, kind of staggers back to the cage and then finishes him.
And then another left.
Rushes him and then finishes.
Yeah, another big left. And it was very reminiscent of how Chandler finished Dan Hooker also, which is what I thought was actually funny.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was really interesting just to see. I don't want to – my device over there heard thought I was saying something to it, Eddie, and was talking. So I was trying to cover the microphone so you wouldn't pick up on – I don't want to say her name because she'll talk.
Oh, no, don't say her name. She's evil.
But – and you've got to be happy, right, for Charles Oliveira. This is a guy who has been, and I hate to say, like, a gatekeeper in the UFC, but, I mean, he's a guy that was a journeyman, right, that lost a bunch of fights, moved down to featherweight, now came back up. Is it 8 fights in a row? I mean, he's just a guy who is, you've got to be really happy for him, for what he's done. But as much as you like to see him and how emotional he was and so excited he was to have the belt, it's weird when you – to me personally, and you can have your own opinion on this, obviously, that he's not the greatest lightweight in the world right now. Let's take Khabib out of it, right? Khabib obviously could probably still be in the division, still at the top of his game. But then you got Dustin Poirier. And you think that when or if Dustin Poirier defeats Conor McGregor in the summer, you've got to make that fight. You've got to line that up. And I see Dustin Poirier winning that fight.
Yeah, Dana, as usual, was really hesitant to make another fight in the press conference. But everyone pretty much knows that the winner of Dustin and Conor is going to get the next title shot, unless something happens, some injury or something doesn't work out timeline-wise. Everyone knows that person is next. Now, I don't see Charles Oliveira is definitely not going to be an easy out for anyone.
No.
But at this moment, yeah, I would have to put – I would put Dustin over him, but I would put Oliveira over Conor.
Yeah, no, I think you could make that case right there. No, I don't think Charles Oliveira is an easy out, but I just think we respect Charles Oliveira, but we just totally respect Dustin Poirier and everything that he's been in. And we've seen him be, you know, we've expected him to be a champion for a long time. You flip over to Michael Chandler, though. You know, people asked him, was the moment too big, right? He said it wasn't fighting for a UFC title. He did all the right things, even, you know, before the fight, the way he spoke to the media. I think I texted you during the press conference just being like, it's hard not to root for Michael Chandler. He's just a humble guy. He was humble in defeat again. But what do you think about him fighting someone maybe like a Justin Gaethje, who doesn't have a fight still?
Dude, a fight like that just gets me excited right off the bat. You know, those two guys love throwing bombs. They're both good wrestlers, so you know the fight's most likely going to stay on its feet. And neither one likes to take a step back. But both, although being very, you know, hardy guys, both can be taken out by a good shot. So that fight's going to be 100% fun. But yeah, Chandler was saying in the back that win, lose, or draw, he knows he's where he's supposed to be. The moment wasn't too big for him. And that basically he just zigged when he should have zagged.
Yeah, you think about it. We are about a little less than 2 months away. So you got to go back into fight camp right away if you're going to put that fight as the co-main event for Conor Dustin, which would make a ton of sense. You put Gaethje Chandler as the co-main. Is that too soon? Is that too soon for Chandler to get back in there?
I think that is too soon. He said he was really looking forward to getting back home and being a husband and a father for a little bit. So having – when was his last fight? Was it February? Against Hooker?
January.
So I don't think he's ready to come back to another one that quick and have three fights in less than 7 months. So I think that's a little too quick for him.
Yeah, I know Gaethje's manager, Ali Abdelaziz, said, yeah, if he could be ready by July 10th, we'll take it. So we'll see what happens next. Let's jump over to the co-main event, Eddie. Beneil Dariush defeats Ferguson via unanimous decision. It sounded like the crowd was very, very pro El Kakouli.
The crowd was deafening for Tony Ferguson, which led me immediately to think one thing, that Nate Diaz would have blown the roof off the joint.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I say deafening, I mean deafening. And Nate Diaz would have been like twice as loud, which is ridiculous to think. But yeah, the crowd is very, very pro-Ferguson the whole time. And as much as we like, Beneil Dariush is like one of those guys, if I had kids, I would let him date my daughter. You know, he's such a nice guy. He's up there. He could take the NMF belt from Wonder Boy. Okay? He really could. But he didn't realize that in the third round, the crowd wasn't booing him because they loved Tony so much. They were booing him because he kind of made the third round so boring. That's why he was being booed during the third round and in the post-fight interview there in the cage.
So it looked like the submission was pretty close in that second round. It looks like, you know, Tony could have got hurt there too. What did you think there's any chance that that Tony was going to tap there?
Definitely. I think at least twice he came like so close to just screaming out. You could see the pain on his face. Like he was literally so close to just screaming, but he knew that if he did, the referee would have stopped it for a technical submission. And even
his face Dariush was showing it.
Yeah, Dariush comes to the back and first thing he says is, "How did he not tap to that heel hook?" That was the first thing out of his mouth. He said he felt Tony's knee pop. Dana said Tony's ankle was like a balloon or something to that effect. And I remember distinctly seeing his right foot kind of wiggling like it was dislocated, like from the ankle.
Yikes.
I'm like, it's no wonder he couldn't get up off the bottom in the third round. But yeah, Tony Ferguson, he's too tough for his own good. And I think that has caught up to him finally.
I mean, you think back to that Gaethje fight and that war, right? You look back to his next two fights, the Charles Oliveira fight, and now this fight against Beneil Dariush. I think it was Oscar Willis of the Mac Life who mentioned to Dana that Tony's now thrown only 34 significant strikes, or landed 34 significant strikes in his last two fights, both decisions in the octagon. You wonder, like, what damage did that Gaethje fight do? And is Tony Ferguson, you know, Dana question, right? Is he too good? Is he too tough for his own good? It seems like, you know, the days of Tony Ferguson, you know, the good days ahead, they're behind him.
Yeah, and it's not just the Gaethje fight, because that may have been the most obvious one. But even all the way back to Lando Venata, he took a lot of shots and got knocked down a lot. And that 12-fight win streak he had, how many shots did he take then? Those things just add up. Yeah. And what, he's in his late 30s now, mid-30s? It's, I hate saying it, man, but we missed it.
The circumstances that he never fought for a title. And some of it was he got passed over for other guys. And other times it was just bad luck. I mean, he was scheduled to fight and bad things happened.
Yeah, so, and then here comes Michael Chandler with the title shot in his second fight. Like, make it make sense, man.
Dana White privilege. That's what it is. Dana White privilege. That's why they had a $75,000 fight bonus as well. Eddie, let's jump quickly to Edson Barboza defeating Shane Burgos by, I guess we could call it a delayed KO. we knew that this fight was going to bring it, right? Edson Barboza, coming into it, he had 8 bonuses. Burgos had 3 already. And this, we knew this was going to be an exciting fight, and it delivered, right? Just both rounds before that were great. And then in that third round, Barboza hits him with a jab, then a right. And a couple seconds later, like, he's sitting there, and then his body, like, collapses, and he starts staggering backwards, and then he falls unconscious on the ground. Like, what was your thought from Kate's side? Like, what was going on? You see the people's faces. Like, I was stunned.
Yeah, at first I thought he tripped over something. And then you watch the replay, and you see how his eyes were just kind of really wide, and they almost never blinked. He was just like a wide-eyed stare until he hit the ground. And that's something I've literally never seen before in all of years of watching fights. You see something like that with the liver kick, or maybe even a groin shot, but nothing to the head like that, which makes you really wonder or worry about what it is. That's something you never see.
Yeah, I agree. And I like, you know, Edson Barboza. And I like Shane Burgos, too, right? You know, those are two guys. I think Burgos was ranked 9th and Barboza was ranked 13th. He has 2-3 fights at featherweight. He lost that split decision. It was really close to Dan Ige in his first fight. He's now won 2 in a row. I still want to see him up against the top, you know, I'd love to see him up against the top featherweights. I mean, Edson Barboza is exciting, man.
He really is. And, man, he was bringing it with those leg kicks. You know, Shane Burgos came out really on fire. But Barbosa's leg kicks, you see those things live, they are so fast and loud. I thought that was what was going to win him the fight. But then he just went away from those and won it in another highlight reel fashion that makes you really worry about the health of the other person. Have we seen Terry Edmonds since the wheel kick?
I hear he was there actually cornering someone over
the weekend. Oh, good.
Just real quick, some quick hits. Caitlin Chikagian, she beat Viviana Arujo. You had Andre Muniz. You mentioned Jacare. He broke his arm.
Yeah, man.
Shoulder, his arm.
I thought he just dislocated his shoulder because you could hear it on the broadcast. And you've heard my shoulders pop, so I just thought that's what it was. But no, apparently he fractured his humerus, had surgery on Sunday, I believe. And, man, how did Andre Muniz not get a bonus for that?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Lando Venata.
Anything else we need to know? Yeah, go ahead.
It's so funny. I tweeted when I saw Mike Grundy. I'm like, he looks like a comic book supervillain. It's like if Lex Luthor took steroids to face Superman on his own. And then he comes out to Oasis, and he's British. I'm like, these things just write themselves. And then he's facing off against Groovy Lando, who comes out to Earth, Wind, and Fire. Next thing you know, low blow by Grundy. I'm like, he really is a supervillain. And then he still almost wins, but Groovy Lando comes out on top, saves the world.
There you go. All right, Eddie, anything else I need to know from UFC 262? Any other highlights from inside the arena?
Schnell and Bontorin. God, those bantamweights were so fast. It just makes you realize why you never see older fighters in the lower divisions. The speed, you really don't have an understanding of it unless you're close to it and you can see, like, 3 punches in the blink of an eye, man. Those guys are so fast, it's ridiculous. I don't know how people were booing them. They were bringing it the whole time.
All right, well, let's flip over to ONE Championship. Just real quick, Eddie, Arjun Buller defeats Brandon Vera, second round TKO. First fighter of Indian descent to win a major MMA title. That's exciting. That's great news. Congratulations to Arjun Buller.
Really is. And also, Houston's B-Win, the Atomweight, defeated previously undefeated Ritu Fogat for a spot in the 2021 ONE Women's Atomweight Grand Prix. So congrats, B. Good luck. We'll be watching.
Awesome. Well, Eddie, that is UFC 262. I'm so glad you made it. I'm glad you're back. But, guys, you're listening to Fight Night right here on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com, and we will be right back.
Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. Ooh-wee. What up with that? What up with that? Ooh-wee. What up with that? What up with that? He said, she said, we said, he said, what up with that? Who knew, you knew, said what, who do, what up with that? What up with that? Yes, sir.
So, Jordan, you know when I got home Sunday, I had to watch Saturday Night Live. It was a season finale with my man Keegan-Michael Key. And some teeny bopper singing whose name I can't remember.
Olivia Rodrigo, Eddie, from High School Musical, the musical, the series, obviously.
Obviously.
And that's where you're wrong as well, Eddie. It is not the season finale.
It's not?
Season finale. Taylor, the girl from The Queen's Gambit, I believe, is next week. And so I think you've got one more episode.
Oh.
Anna Taylor-Joy, I think it is.
Cool.
So.
I haven't watched that one either.
Just dropping knowledge right here.
But if you haven't seen it, man, the Muppet sketch really hit home for me because I used to love watching that as a kid. And you should know that knowing me, Statler and Waldorf were my favorites. Just a couple of smartasses sitting up in the balcony, just heckling everybody. I love that. And then to see them come up as the security, that was awesome.
Yeah, I like the Michael Jordan, The Last Dance sketch where he was kept betting his... I think it was Heidi Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
He was the security guard. He kept betting her in quarters, which I thought was pretty funny.
That was so mean. All right, well, Jordan, let's get into it. Dana White sort of put out an ultimatum for John Jones over the weekend. What's up with that?
Yeah, so Dana was asked about John Jones in the post-fight press conference. You probably can actually give us a little bit more color than that. But he said, hey, there's fights available. They're here. I'm going to keep making fights every weekend, doing fights. If Jones wants to fight, he can. If he doesn't, he doesn't have to. Nobody's going to force John Jones to fight. At one point, he said, hey, John Jones can fight this summer, or John Jones can never fight again. So it wasn't the ultimatum like, hey, like, fight now or you're never fighting. But it kind of seems like, you know, this is not going in the right direction for John and the UFC. You know, Dana White had done an interview with ESPN this week and said that, hey, John could fight Stipe Miocic if they're going to do Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis, which that sounds like that's the fight to make. John came out on Twitter and said, look, he's not fighting Stipe Miocic. Maybe for a title, maybe if he's defending a title, but unless he's willing to wait. He said, I'm sick of hearing that you're not a big enough star. You don't bring in enough pay-per-view. I'm ready to fight fights that will bring in pay-per-view. So John kind of admitted, hey, you know, I'm ready to do this. And maybe he hasn't, you know, been the biggest draw in the past, but I mean, he's been a big draw. Maybe he's not like Ronda or Conor or Khabib draw, but John is still like, you know, a top five draw. And we'll talk about Conor McGregor in a little bit about what he made for that Dustin Poirier fight back in January. But you've got to think if they can give John, you know, 10 to 15 million out the door at the end on the back end, that's a pretty good deal. And you would think that hopefully he's going to get there. John Jones is going to meet with the UFC again. He's going to meet with Hunter Campbell, who kind of takes care of that. Dana says he has a better relationship with Hunter. He's getting a new lawyer and new sports agents. So we'll see if that happens. Eddie, one other thing, though, I wanted to say about the press conference with Dana White. Someone asked him about this Triller and GSP thing. So I had heard last week that Triller wanted to put GSP in that fight against Oscar De La Hoya for his comeback fight, that they had been in negotiations, but that it was Dana White who wouldn't give him permission to fight. And, you know, obviously with GSP still being under contract, he can't go anywhere else. And so that would make they would need to allow them to do that. Dana White does not like Oscar De La Hoya. He's not a big fan of Triller, it sounds like. I mean, what did you think? You heard them talk about about Triller at the press conference.
Dana talking about Triller was like a high school boy talking about a girl that he thinks is disgusting. He's like, I don't care about you. Go away. Do whatever you're doing. Stop texting me. Stop calling me. He's literally ghosting Triller. He literally says he won't answer their calls. He won't answer their texts. He's like, just go away. So it's not really that he said no to GSP. It's that he won't engage with them. He's like, just do whatever you're doing. Leave me alone. Leave us out of it. He really does not like Triller. And you already know he doesn't like your old neighbor, Oscar. So
yeah, no, he definitely doesn't like him.
No, that was a no-go from the start, man. I can't emphasize enough how much he hates Triller. Really can't. It's comical. I mean, if you haven't seen the video, watch the post-fight press conference video on YouTube. You can still find it. MMA Junkie, MMA Fighting, UFC. It's hilarious just how he goes off on them. And you better believe it's uncensored. It's great. Now, talking about Dana, you know, there's also, you know, things you said in the last week or so about Nick Diaz, Kayla Harrison. What's up with those?
Yeah, so Dana White told Brett Okamoto that he spoke with Nick Diaz after UFC 161. So we knew that Nick was in Jacksonville. He said that that Nick really does want to fight, but he also said he questioned how hungry he is. Right? So he said, hey, I'm talking to fighters all the time. I hear from them that you know, that they are hungry, that they want to fight for a title, and he just doesn't see that same fire, that same energy from Nick Diaz. So he's not actually sure if he's going to come back and fight. They're going to offer him a fight, but they're not sure if Nick's going to accept it, but they're going to see what's going to happen. Next thing is Kayla Harrison. You know, we heard that he said that, you know, he wasn't sure if Kayla was ready for the fighters in the UFC, but that it's at, because the UFC's obviously at a whole different level. When Kayla was asked about it by Errol Hawani last week, she said that if Dana White is ready to pay her a lot of money, I'll make him a lot of money. Kayla's contract's up with the PFL at the end of this season. So it comes to something I wonder, like, both of these situations, is it so much that Dana White, that Nick Diaz really doesn't want to fight, or that Kayla Harrison really doesn't want to fight, or she's not ready? Or is it that they just want more money than the UFC is actually willing to pay? Did Nick Diaz come in and say, yeah, I'll fight, but I want this amount of money? And so Dana comes back and says, I don't know if Nick Diaz really has that hunger anymore, if he really wants to fight. Or is it, hey, this is my negotiating tactic, I'm just going to say, Nick Diaz, not really interested, when Nick Diaz really just asked for more money?
I'm going to have to go with option number two there. And in both cases, because I don't know how you say Kayla Harrison, who's right now, I believe, sits at 9-0. So by the time the PFL season is finished, she'll probably be like 12-0. Didn't Chris Weidman get a title shot when he was 10-0 as a professional? Not 10-0 in the UFC, 10-0 as a professional. So it's not like, you know, she's unseasoned, or they've never had someone that with so few fights come into the UFC. It's just that, well, partly it's that she'd have to fight at featherweight, and there's literally like two featherweights on the roster. I think that has a lot to do with it for Kayla. And Nate, it's money.
Yeah. I'll give you a little bit less credit, right, with Chris Weidman, right? Chris Weidman, he fought four fights out of the UFC, 4-0 there. He came in, he fought five fights in the UFC, Damian Maia, Mark Munoz when he was on a tear.
So he came into the UFC at 4-0?
Came out of UFC at 4-0.
And Kayla Harrison's going to be 12-0 at the end of this year, most likely?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the fact that there's no featherweight division. Right?
That's the thing.
There's only Amanda. And that the fact that, you know, she has fought tin cans. I mean, she has not fought good people, let's be honest.
Well, who's out there?
That's the other problem.
Yeah, maybe she goes to it. Nah, I don't know. Let's not speculate on the future. Let's talk about Conor. He gets all the clicks, right? Believe he topped the Forbes money list this year. What's up with that?
Yeah, so Forbes released its top 10 list of highest paid athletes. And this is for 2021. And I think it goes from May 1st through April 30th. I think those are the dates on it. That's why it was released right now. But Conor topped the list at $180 million. $158 million came from outside the UFC. So I think it was about $150 million from selling his stake in proper number 12. And then he also has endorsements with Roots of Fight, with DraftKings. And then I'll say the other, you know, the $22 million came from his fight against Dustin Poirier back in January.
How many millions?
You know, Conor making 22.
And you can guarantee that John Jones knows that figure.
Well, I mean, that's fine. Conor, you know, John Jones does not sell anywhere near what Conor McGregor sells.
I know he doesn't, but that's just a fact. So, if they were offering him like probably 15 instead of 22, instead of the 8 that they're offering, I bet that fight would have been made already.
Well, I think about it. I mean, does John Jones sell half as many pay-per-views as Conor McGregor? So should we just cut that into 11 right away?
Well, that's still more than the 10 that he said they offered, or he said he wouldn't accept. So that's a starting point, right?
We'll see.
Give him 12. It'll happen, I bet you. Now, on a sour note, Anthony Rumble Johnson was arrested last week, right after his Bellator light heavyweight Grand Prix win. What's up with that?
Yeah, so if you actually look at the arrest record, it's at 11 p.m. on Friday night. Now, he was in the co-main event against Jose Augusto that same night. He fights, he does a press conference, and then it sounds like he was picked up by New Canaan police for identity theft. And this is what it says. According to the arrest record, on November 9th, 2019, the New Canaan police took a complaint against regarding a victim having their credit card being used by a third party without permission. And it says the illegal use of a credit card was used to purchase a round-trip airline from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to Newark, New Jersey. The name of the passenger was Anthony Johnson.
What?
A subsequent investigation determined Johnson used the illegally obtained credit card to purchase the airline ticket. An arrest warrant was obtained for Johnson for the above charges. There's been no comments from Bellator. There's been no comments from Anthony Johnson. He was released on a $500 bond. The article, I read the article. It did not say one word about him being a Bellator fighter. It just said Florida man Anthony Johnson was picked up at the Mohegan Sun. Like, didn't mention, like, this guy fought on Showtime tonight. Not one thing mentioned and made any notice that he was a fighter. But in Connecticut, identity theft is a third-degree Class D felony. It's punishable up to 5 years in jail and up to a $5,000 fine. Anthony Johnson is expected to appear in court on June 8th to respond to the charges. So that's kind of crazy.
There's so much of that that doesn't make sense.
I know. It's really weird.
I don't even want to try. Give us new fights, Jordan.
All right. So first one, big boxing. According to Tyson Fury, he's going to face Anthony Joshua on August 14th in Saudi Arabia. Mm. It's the same day as this other new fight, Derek Brunson versus Darren Till.
Ooh.
So that's a fun fight. I like that.
It really bothers me that that's not happening in the UK.
Well, I think they're trying to do that still.
Yeah.
Jeremy Stephens is fighting Matheus Gamrot. Paul Daly fighting Jason Jackson at 175 pounds.
Daly weight.
Bellator. You've got Paulo Costa fighting Jared Cannonier, August 21st. I love that. Thiago Santos fighting Johnny Walker. It's a good fight. And then there's a weird one. Islam Makhachev, who we love. We think he's a great fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He could be the next guy. He's fighting Thiago Moises at lightweight. And you're saying, that's weird. Islam Makhachev is fighting Thiago Moises, that he's not ranked. Why is the Makhachev is ranked 10th? Why is he not moving up? Is it that guys just don't want to fight him, or are they just really just trying to protect him still? I don't know. I don't get it. So, Eddie, that's what's up with that. That is new fights, guys. You're listening to Fight Night on 104.9 The Horn, hornfm.com, and we will be right back.
Friday night, Jordan, Bellator 259. The featherweight champ Chris Cyborg is here fighting Leslie Smith in their rematch for the Bellator women's featherweight title. Friday night, 8 p.m. on Showtime. That is the biggest fight of the weekend, MMA-wise. And it's always fun when Cyborg fights because it is just devastation normally.
Yeah, and this is the rematch, right? So Chris Cyborg, she is one of the best. I mean, you think about the greatest women fighters out there,
mm-hmm.
and the ability that she's had to finish. And, you know, pre what Amanda Nunes is today, it was Chris Cyborg. She was just dominating everybody. And it was really just, you know, incredible the entire time. And so to see her come out and continue to fight and do it in Bellator now, she's won belts in so many different divisions. And so obviously I'm looking forward to this fight, but you know, I don't expect much to happen. She defeated Leslie Smith back in the UFC in her UFC debut, first round, minute 21. So,
Leslie says she's got a lot more to offer this time around, and I hope she's right because I hate it when Cyborg just demolishes people. I'm like, just give me a second round at least, you know? Give me a little bit of drama. So I hope Leslie Smith does have more to offer this time. But you're right, Cyborg, Strikeforce champ, Invicta champ, UFC champ, Bellator champ. I'm waiting on her to finish this round in Bellator, go over to one, take the belt there. I mean, she's already got the Grand Slam in the U.S. What's left?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's she's great, right? In a co-main event, you've got Darian Caldwell fighting Leandro Fio. That's another fun fight. I like Darian Caldwell, obviously. He was in the featherweight Grand Prix, and he is someone that's going to be a great fight. Austin Vanderford, Mr. Paige Van Zandt fighting Fabian Edwards, which is Leon Edwards' brother. So that's over on Friday night on Showtime, Eddie. I want to talk.
Oh, but and before we get off of that, everyone's favorite twerking fighter, Valley Laredo, fights on the prelims, which I believe will be. I don't know exactly where the Bellator prelims are going to be. Maybe the Bellator app. Look for it. You'll find
it. They're still taking her very slowly. I'm surprised she's not on the main card. But UFC Vegas 27, Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt. This was supposed to be like 2 weeks ago, Corey Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw. Now Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt. This was just supposed to be a killer few weeks of bantamweight fights.
Right.
You got Rob Font coming off that knockout, you know, first round knockout over Marlon Moraes back in December. Before that, you know, Ricky Simone, Sergio Pettis. And you got Cody Garbrandt. I don't believe he has fought since, you know, that Rafael Funchal fight, which was almost a year ago, June 6th, right? So that was at UFC 250. We thought he was going to fight against Devson Figueiredo. He had his COVID issues. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm excited to see this. This is a great fight, man. These are guys who are at the top of this division and could really, you know, Cody Garbrandt, a former champion, this is really going to show us where Rob Font is in the division. Rob Font ranked third. Cody Garbrandt ranked fourth.
Yeah, this is a surprisingly good card, you know, coming off the heels of 262. Usually the next card just really gets overlooked, and that's something we're already dealing with in this this event. But there are some really good names on this card. Even if you go all the way down to the prelims, you got Court McGee, Ben Rothwell, Ricardo Ramos, Yancy Medeiros. But then you get to the main card, you got the Hermanson-Shabazian fight that got kicked back a couple weeks. Got Felicia Spencer, the other featherweight on the roster.
Yeah, this is the last scheduled women's featherweight fight as of right now. So don't read into it, but yeah. It's the last one that's scheduled. Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were both back in Invicta in a month, unfortunately, because there just isn't a featherweight division. But you move down to strawweight, you've got Yan Shannon versus Carlos Esparza. The winner has a great shot at the next strawweight title fight.
Yeah, no, Eddie, I mean, this is a meaningful fight, right? Yan is ranked third. She's sitting behind Zhang Weili and Yuan and Jacek. Two people that probably not going to get a title shot. You know, Yuan and Jacek probably not going to get a title shot right away.
Not as long as Rose has the belt.
Zhang Weili, maybe she could, but if you're not going to go with Zhang, then you've got to go to the winner of this fight because Sean is ranked third. Carlos Esparza is ranked fourth. And Sean has wins over Claudia Gadelha, Carolina Kovalkiewicz, Angela Hill. So those are her last three fights. Putting Carlos Esparza, who is a former champion, on the mix as well, that all of a sudden, that's a pretty good resume. And then Carlos Esparza, surprisingly, like, she has wins. Alexa Grasso, Michelle Waterson, Marina Rodriguez. You know, these are not bad wins for her. And so this is, she could really put herself in a spot to be a strong champion or a strong champion contender.
And after the last week, that Marina Rodriguez fight win is looking much better on her resume because they really put her in a position to become a star, and she really used it to the best of her ability and really enhanced her name in that main event against Michelle Waterson.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I mean, while there's not the biggest names, there's definitely some meaningful fights, meaningful in bantamweight, bit meaningful in strawweight and meaningful in middleweight, right? I think those are some really good meaningful fights. So Eddie, hit us up with boxing real quick.
Yeah. Oh, and real quick, on Friday night, Invicta makes their debut on Access TV, so they finally got themselves a TV deal. So we may not see them lose all their fighters in the future. But then Saturday night, going up against the UFC, Jose Ramirez versus Josh Taylor Jr. A couple of junior welterweights going for undisputed status. Jordan, I love it when there's all the gold on the line. Ramirez has the WBC and WBO belt. Taylor has the IBF and WBA titles. Las Vegas, ESPN Plus. That one's going to be fun, too.
Nice. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. Justin and Stu, Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, right here on 104.9 The Horn. You can follow us at Fight Night ATX on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And stay tuned. Next week, we are going to talk. We're going to recap next week and get ready. Fights just keep coming, Eddie.
That's right. Stay positive, love your life, get vaccinated, and if we ever didn't thank you, let us do it now.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.